reads, resolve that the date October 1, 1998, in the third sentence, Article 5, Section 9D of the bylaws, is replaced with October.
It's the same.
A fairly simple change. I think the only issue we've seen over the last commentary period is there was discussion by some of the SOs that they would like one-year director terms. Initial directors would be appointed for only one-year terms. I think the commentary runs on this two ways. One, to the extent that they're we're in transition, and to the extent that we'd like to make sure that things are off on an even keel, people wanted to reserve the right to transition director set off after 1 year. The counter argument to that is that a lot of people would prefer stability in those director terms, i.e., to the extent that we're getting more and more comfortable with the process of how the SOs are being formed, and I think we saw that in the last 2 days, that the original terms of 1, 2, and 3 years are appropriate, so starting the staggered basis. So the recommendation is not, in fact, to change to one-year terms.
Yeah, and just if they're going to elect the directors, they should elect good ones so they don't want to get rid of them after a year.
I really think we should hold with the staggered terms and put the effort into getting the right directors in now. There's opportunity for change, and there's an accountability issue, in my view, that it's important to get it done right at the beginning.
Is there further discussion on the resolution? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
I move that we approve it.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. The next item this morning is relates to ratification of the Memorandum of Understanding, which I executed on behalf of ICANN with the other signatories for the formation of the Protocol Support Organization. There was a prior action by the board on this matter in Berlin, and it requires a conforming revision to our bylaws and adoption of the PSO bylaws. We have a motion here, which I'll introduce. Resolved that the Memorandum of Understanding is ratified the board, and then it further goes on to replace Article 6C of the bylaws in order to conform to the executed Memorandum of Understanding. I think that we can go forward with discussion on this without my reading the entirety of the text. Are there any board comments? No. In view of the fact that this resolution completes an action on which the board had extensive prior discussion, I believe it's appropriate to ask for a motion to approve.
I move.
Second. In a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is approved. We now come to a matter that's been before us for some time, which is the acceptance of a proposal for the formation of our address support organization. This matter has been worked on by the staff and considered by the board at the discussion level previously. It was discussed yesterday, and we have a resolution and discussion which will be led by Director Kreisenring.
Thank you. We had extensive discussion before yesterday and yesterday during the public meeting on the ASO proposals. One received by the input from the regional internet registries, and one received by a group amongst which KIX and Euro-ISPA. The discussions have led to a compromise solution of which there are two main elements. One is that the board accepts the proposal for the formation of a memorandum of understanding based address supporting organization and includes in that acceptance a review, just like the PSO, of the address supporting organization. And secondly, to add to it an ad hoc group to be constituted by ICANN, in which a number of concerns expressed can be studied and may lead to an advice to ICANN on a number of issues concerned with numbering and the convergence of networks and services. We have presented, I have presented yesterday the main text, the main body of a number of resolutions I would like now to present to you.
Do you need me to?
You notice that we're going to do this one, we're going to do this one, so I'm going to do discussion on this, and accept it, and we're going to do that.
So yes, that's fine.
Okay. Okay.
I want you to read me the text.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't noticed that these are two submissions.
Okay. The President points out to me that on our agenda we have separated a discussion on the creation of the ad hoc group, and I will follow that. I note that with the acceptance of this resolution, effectively, ICANN will have reached a unique proposal for an ASO, which we will then have accepted. The resolution is that the Board will accept the proposal for the formation of a memorandum of understanding based address supporting organization submitted by ARIN, RIPE NCC, and APNIC. Resolves further that the interim president and CEO will be authorized and directed to prepare implementing bylaws and to sign an appropriate memorandum of understanding in cooperation with the proponents of the proposal, subject to ratification by the Board. We will instruct the interim president and CEO further to ensure that the memorandum of understanding includes the review mechanism similar to that set forth in the protocol supporting organization memorandum of understanding to occur not less than annually. Further, the Board resolves and that it notes with approval the continuing efforts towards the organization and establishment of a new regional internet registries for the African and Latin American Caribbean geographic regions, AFRINIC and LACNIC, and notes a strong support for these efforts amongst the existing regional internet registries and encourages all parties involved to work expeditiously to complete the necessary structural and technical tasks to enable the new registries to sign the MOU as soon as possible. Pending final recognition of the new regional internet registries, the Board encourages the ASO Council to involve representatives of those registries in the activities of the ASO as observers. And finally, the Board will resolve that the interim president and CEO, working with Director Kreinbrink, is directed to establish an ad hoc group to be charged with developing the objectives and proposing structures for future policies in the area of numbering, especially as required to meet global market needs and taking into account the convergence of information technology services and networks. The group will include representatives of businesses, among which telecom operators and internet service providers and trade organizations, the ASO Council, the ICANN Board, and other legitimately interested parties. The group will present an interim report before the second ICANN public meeting in 2000. The final report from the ad hoc group will be presented to the ICANN Board prior to the second annual meeting. I put these resolutions for your consideration and discussion.
Their discussion. We have, for the purposes of moving through the agenda, separated the acceptance, the three items related to acceptance and implementation of the proposal from the item on creation of the ad hoc group. Is there discussion on the acceptance related items?
Yeah.
Sorry, colleague, that the text I was quoting from had one very important omission, which is that to the drop it review mechanism for the memorandum of understanding, we have that the first review will occur by the time of ICANN's annual meeting in 2000, which is very essential.
Just to clarify, the review is to make sure that the structure is open, that people are, that it's doing its job properly, et cetera. Just can you?
I believe that the review of the supporting organization, just like the protocol support of supporting organizations, contains all the elements which checks that the mission, the procedures, everything the supporting organization does fits exactly into the needs of the internet community.
Yeah, I'd like to make the comment, having participated in some of the background discussions on this with the various parties, that these are, we're entering in a time of new relationships in convergence of various interests in the internet. I think that with specific regard to the prior work on the PSO, the parties felt regular review mechanism was essential. In some sense, some absolute sense, the parties obviously are entitled to call for review at any time they choose. Providing explicitly for review seems a good way to jog everyone into thinking hard about, are we proceeding successfully in this area, and do we need to make mid-course corrections as we go. So I think it's also appropriate to take the same approach with the ASO Memorandum of Understanding. And I will work with, if the resolution is approved, work with the proponents and parties to the MOU to that end.
Okay, and also the parties who were not part of the MOU. Thanks.
Is there further discussion on the three items relating to the acceptance of the proposal?
No.
The
two items.
No.
There are three. There are three on
the
on, right, right, right.
We're, that's not three, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is
for the
adults. Yes.
Yes.
If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? These three items relating to recognition of the PSO and directing the President to move forward with the details of implementation are approved. We'll now proceed to discussion of the item on the study group. Hans?
For the study group, I feel, President, that we should proceed as follows. Through the ICANN website, we will invite the interested parties mentioned in the resolution to present their input to the development of objectives and the proposed structures for future policies in the areas of numbering. And these proposals will be considered by yourself and myself and presented to the ICANN board to set a terms of reference for the ad hoc group to work upon. I believe that most of the work of the ad hoc group will have to be done by email, and maybe one or two teleconferences will be added to it. It could also well be that a physical meeting of concerned could be organized next to an IETF gathering. And I do hope, and I spoke with Director Moray on that, that we will also have input from the Internet Architecture Board and IETF people to the discussions. I want to stress that in establishing this ad hoc group, we will not go into direct competition with the ASO. Indeed, we will seek their active participation because it will touch upon the activities of the regional internet registries, but it will not take their place or compete with it. It will add to it. And similarly, it goes for the IETF. A group like this cannot do the work which has to be done in the IETF. But during the discussions here this week and the input we received also on the comments list, at least we noted that there is a gray area, a gap between the activities of different groups working on numbering issues. And with the creation of the ad hoc group, we have also the community support for the creation of the ASO, so that a potential conflict between two different proposals is resolved by the creation.
Is there further discussion? Director Murat?
Yeah, since I was absent in the last telephone conference, sorry, I was sick, so I need to clear some of the points. Is that going to be okay? Okay. First of all, I have some comments and a question. I have a comment about the relationship with the ASO, you know, the role of this group itself, and because of the nature of the address assignment, of we are talking about the IP address space, and then this group is toward the to meet the global market needs, and then the market exists only on a proper way of handling of address assignment work, right? And so the you know, we have in the internet history, we encountered the various situations, and probably one of the examples is the TIDER introduction. So we shifted from the class address allocation to the classless address allocation, and that was extremely important work in the internet history, which has been led by the extensive review by the ITF group, and a lot of work regarding to the, you know, from technical point of view and the engineering point of view. And then, I was concerning about the, you know, that kind of a technical expertise work. The point of the ASO is to make sure that that kind of, you know, the address allocation work could be properly be processed by the group. Okay, so is this consistent with the in that sense? Okay, and that is the first question. And I have a second question, but
as far as I understand the technicalities, the proposal is consistent with that aspect. The group will not do the work on the IP address allocation as such, as I understand it. That is the realm of the ASO. There is a gray area from the mobile operator community, from other communities, that the interfaces, the interconnection between address spaces in one area of services and the IP addresses is not well addressed. At least there are some issues to be raised and discussed and studied to see how those can be dealt with, and probably also finally where they should fit in. And I believe that should be the main focus of the ad hoc group.
Okay. So, you know, my basic idea is there, okay, internet is a work of, you know, abstracting the free communication, so that the free and creative business could sit on top of it, right? So technically right way to assigning the allocation of the address space is extremely important. And so you say this is consistent with that thing. Okay. If that is the case, then my next question is there. Okay. It says there the group consists of the representative from the telecom operators, internet service providers, and trade organization and the ASO. So the group has to include those representatives, right? And so what about those expertise? You talked with the IAB people, and the IAB is not included in here. So is there any reason why?
There is a practical political reason there, which is that the let's say the group emerged from discussions with telecom operators, internet service providers, and regional internet registries. I've only spoken with one representative from the IAB, and he was very constructive in supporting me in finding also the right words. And he is going to contact his IAB colleagues, and I have understood from him that that the IAB will agree to such a group, but I have not been in direct contact, so to specifically name IETF or IAB as participants in the ad hoc group is a bit difficult for me, since I have not the direct feedback from that organization, only indirect. But as I said also in the introduction to the resolution, they are wholeheartedly invited to participate. And I would welcome very much if, for example, someone like John Plenson would agree to participate in the work of the ad hoc group and bring the expertise of the IETF, the IAB, and the probably the, what is it, the IEG, into the activities.
Okay.
Can you just clarify, I mean, this, it's like a study group, and they're going to look at these issues and figure out where the conflicts are, but then the addressing is still up to the ASOs, the protocols are still up to the PSO, but this is kind of like a cross-community study group that has no, I mean, they surface issues, they make public where the conflicts or the tensions are technically, and then it's up to, but they have no statutory power, then it's up to the constituent bodies to deal with what they come up with. Is that?
Yes, it's an ad hoc gathering of a number of concerned parties in not only the internet community, but the adjacent telecommunications community to investigate a number of uncertainties and to come with recommendations how to deal with them. It might well be that the recommendations will properly fit in the existing structures. It may lead to maybe an advice to adapt to existing structures, to add to existing structures. I don't know. It's completely gray. And I do hope, that the ad hoc group will shed the necessary light, because I feel, and I expressed that also in the public comment, I feel that the concerns expressed by parties are sincere.
So, one thing, just, I've been asked to turn your mics off when you're not speaking because it creates interference for the translators. So, it reports to the board, and its purpose is sort of to make sure that we don't, as people said before, we don't go ahead and be technically clueless, because there's some technology that doesn't happen to be, that we don't happen to notice, to make sure that it gets noticed, and that, again, wireless apps or whatever. I'm just trying to get a clarification of the purpose.
Maybe I could summarize. The purpose of the ad hoc group is to address a concern expressed in the community. And I do also hope that the report will be of value to the community, not just to the board.
Hans, just to make it clear here, so there's no confusion on the record, the bylaws now provide that the supporting organizations have the primary responsibility for developing and recommending substantive policies regarding those matters falling within their specific responsibilities. This ad hoc group is intended as an addition, not a replacement, for that role.
Because it deals with what's not in the responsibilities in some sense.
Is there a further discussion on this item?
I think I'm having participated in some of the discussion, over, particularly over the last couple of days, I think I'm fairly clear on the reason why this needs to be brought forward in terms of the Internet itself. And I know while we've been concentrating on the foundations and stability, this looks like it's going to be a question we're going to have to address in the year 2000 timeframe anyway. And I think some of the questions are fairly well answered in terms of when the reports will come back. I guess my question is more of a process question. You know, when do we get a look at the what exactly? There's a high level what in here, described in here, and I think that's good enough for now. But when would we get a look at the exact what? Because I think we need to have the parties understand, whether it's IAB or IETF or ASOs or PSOs, we have to understand the exact what, so we know it's focused and it's relevant. And then there's somewhat perhaps even an iterative loop to answer the who question. Exactly who will be involved, and I'm sure the process will be the process we're now familiar with across a number of areas, but how do we get to the final what and who questions that set the foundation?
The resolution, consistent with the board's practice, directs me to develop the specifics of this and bring them back to the board. I would certainly, working with Hans, convene a meeting to review a detailed charge, and also the to ensure that there's comprehensive participation and bring that back to the board. I doubt that could be accomplished in less than a month, but I'd sort of in that time frame that I'm thinking of.
I had a similar question basically on the process and the timing as to how soon you might be able to achieve that, noting that I think the ASO now having a charter to go ahead and form will need a little time to prepare to participate in this activity.
Well, these board meetings always end up with the staff director to do many things. I certainly anticipate that we would have this group functioning with the board's interim approval between now and November, so that there would be some progress evident.
I just want all the board to understand that the nature of the address space is a very essential. You know, what we are working on is that everything is sitting on top of it. So I think this is a very active shell issue I'm concerned about. So I really strongly recommend that I think this is very essential to have any of the discussion regarding to the address assignment. We need the internet architecture expert in it. So I understand that the ASO Council would be in the group, as well as the Internet Architecture expert, especially on the address space, and probably further on the IPv6 address allocation, and it will be changing. So it's really essential to have them in the group.
Director Murray, I think it's very important to record in the minutes that, in particular, you are, and I support you in that, making a plea to the Internet Architecture Board to participate actively into this activity. Thank you.
I'm sure this is a redundant request of the President, but in coming to the Board with the composition and charter, I'm sure that the Board would be interested to see a work plan presented to it as well.
Yes, if there isn't any further discussion, could we have a motion on this resolution?
A second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is approved.
Can I just say, this is totally unofficial, but just at some point I think we need a similar ad hoc group to look at non-domain name system of user-friendly names, and I don't want to discuss it, but I just want to put it up here as something. It's another area where there's new technology that we're going to need to deal with, and I think it's important for us not to get too focused on just what we've got now.
I certainly, speaking for myself, I certainly agree with that. The next item on the agenda has to do with recognition of the non-commercial domain name holders constituency. This is an item that has also been the subject of considerable discussion and a specific resolution at the Berlin meeting asking the proposers of this constituency, which is the seventh of the seven constituencies which were recognized by the board in the Singapore meeting in March, to expeditiously bring us a proposal with a certain amount of background effort, in fact a considerable amount, in order to work out things having to do, as those who attended a meeting yesterday are aware, having to do with the exact status and meaning of the word non-commercial. We have a proposal before us that was discussed and substantial support for which was evident yesterday. The implementing resolution says that the non-commercial domain name holders constituency of the domain name supporting organization is provisionally recognized until the annual meeting of the board in November 1999 on the same basis and subject to the same conditions as set forth in resolutions 9931 and 9934. What this does... I'm sorry, yes, sir. What this does essentially is create the seventh constituency of the DNSO on the same basis, and then permits all seven of those constituencies to respond to the board's urgings yesterday and otherwise that they move forward into their permanent status as soon as they can so that they may seat their directors on the ICANN board. Is there discussion on the resolution? May I have a motion to approve?
I move.
Okay, Director. And the second? Yeah, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is approved. We now come to proposal for adoption of a dispute resolution policy, and Louis Tuton will lead the discussion on that item.
In light of the discussion yesterday, the staff has prepared a suggested resolution, which I'll read now. Whereas on April 30th, 1999, the World Intellectual Property Organization, WIPO, presented a report with its recommendation to ICANN among other things, a uniform dispute resolution policy for domain name disputes. Whereas at its Berlin meeting, the board referred the dispute resolution recommendations to the domain name supporting organization and encouraged testbed registrars to develop a model dispute resolution policy for voluntary adoption. Whereas on August 3rd, 1999, the DNSO Names Council submitted to the board five recommendations on a uniform dispute resolution policy as consensus positions. Whereas the testbed registrars under the leadership of America Online and Register.com consulted among themselves and with post-testbed registrars and network solutions and proposed a model dispute resolution policy for voluntary adoption, which approximately 20 registrars have agreed to adopt, it is now first resolved that the board accepts the DNSO's recommendation that ICANN adopt a uniform dispute resolution policy for accredited registrars in the COM, NET, and ORG top-level domains. Further resolved, that the president is directed, with the assistance of ICANN staff and counsel, to prepare implementation documents for approval by the board after public notice and comment on a schedule that allows the policy to be put into place within 45 days. Further resolved, that the board gives the following guidance as to the preparation of the implementation documents. One, the registrar's model dispute resolution policy should be used as a starting point. Two, the president or his delegate should convene a small drafting committee, including persons selected by him, to express views of the registrar, non-commercial, and intellectual property slash business interests. Three, in addition to the factors mentioned in paragraph 171, paren 2, paren, of the WIPO report, the following should be considered in determining whether a domain name was registered in bad faith. First, whether the domain name holder is making a legitimate, non-commercial, or fair use of mark without intent to misleadingly divert consumers for commercial gain or to tarnish the mark. B, whether the domain name holder, including individuals, businesses, and other organizations, is commonly known by the domain name, even if the holder has acquired no trademark or service mark rights. And C, whether in seeking payment for the transfer of the domain name holder has limited its request for payment to its out-of-pocket costs. And the fourth point of guidance is there should be a general parity between the appeal rights of complainants and domain name holders. And fifth point of guidance is the dispute policy should seek to minimize reverse domain name hijacking. The next part of the resolution is further resolved that the president is authorized to provisionally approve dispute resolution providers under the uniform dispute resolution policy. From time to time, a list of provisionally approved providers should be compiled and provided to each accredited registrar to be incorporated into its policy. The DNSO is requested to recommend principles for a more formal dispute resolution provider accreditation program for consideration by the board in 2000. And the final part of the resolution is further resolved that the board requests WIPO to provide recommendations on topics set forth in a list to be transmitted to WIPO by the president. This resolution, I think, resolves the issues that are reflected in the two proposals before the board, basically. The proposal that's actually technically before the board from the domain name supporting organization, and also the registrar's voluntary policy, which worked out some of the details that and is much closer to final adoption and implementation than the policy of the domain name, more general policy statement of the domain name supporting organization. This permits achievement of the overall goal of quickly getting a uniform policy in place. It also, by using the registrar's model dispute resolution policy as a starting point, it also makes it more feasible to have a uniform policy among all the registrars operating in the top-level domains, the global top-level domains, because Network Solutions has voluntarily agreed to abide by that policy. The resolution also in the guidance section contains some concerns that the raised mainly by non-commercial interests that generally the community seems to have accepted as valid concerns that should be addressed more explicitly. And indeed, even the original proponents of a dispute resolution policy, namely the intellectual property interests and the business interests, for the most part, don't dispute these items. Finally, with respect to the mechanics, there was a broad consensus in the General Assembly and among discussions of others that the way to get it done and finally put in place is to get the final details put together by a small committee, which this resolution envisions that the president, staff, and council would convene and complete the process so that it can be done within 45 days. So are there any questions?
Yeah, not surprisingly, this is the one, I think, where there's, and it's in the membership, but there's going to be a lot of discussion. My first basic question is, there was a resolution from the General Assembly which listed certain specific things that needed to be done, all of which I thought were reasonable, including a definition of cyber squatting, including a definition as well as an attempt to minimize reverse domain name hijacking. The drafting group should include individuals' interests. You know, however they're represented, that word belongs in there. And so I'd like to talk about some of these things, because, I mean, the first is what was the problem with the GA resolution that we couldn't just use some of its words wholesale?
The GA resolution reflected one of the limitations on the GA process. I witnessed it being drafted on a table out in the cafeteria during a break in the meeting.
Yeah.
And it you know, suffered from some looseness. However, I would say that with respect to the specific points that you raised, it is the intent to include them in the guidance here.
Well, then why don't we just put them in the resolution?
Because they are... they are in here.
Well,
I mean, what specifically? I was trying to respond to
a definition of cyber squatting. I know that bad faith is part of the definition, but they just seem to be pretty reasonable points. And we need a definition of reverse domain name hijacking.
Well, I don't think that it's going to be feasible to sit here and come up with a definition of reverse domain name hijacking.
We need to direct the group to come up with a definition of it.
Well, I would assume that paragraph 5 of the guidance at the top of the second page will deal with that.
Well, can you just seek to define and minimize?
I believe it's even better that the dispute policy should seek to minimize reverse domain hijacking.
Yeah, I said define and minimize.
You want...
It's a nit, but...
It does seem to be a nit. How can you minimize it without defining it?
Well, that's what people try to do with cyber squatting, and I think we're finally trying to come up with a definition as well.
I don't see any objection to putting
Great.
In
okay.
words.
Then let's just put it
I'm just making the point
yeah.
that it seems to be irrelevant.
It probably is, but let's stick it in if it's irrelevant.
There's not a resolution. Is there not a motion yet?
Yeah. Is there objection to the proposed rewording?
I urge that we do reword it.
Okay.
Can we also then go to that same section, the guidance, item 2, and include individuals? And if you want to change it to consider the interests as opposed to express the views, that would be fine. I mean, I'm not suggesting you have 29 individuals on the committee.
The sense... of the meeting, and yes. I think it was very much that the drafting group be kept small.
I understand. That's what I said, to consider the interests. So I'm not suggesting, again, that we have 29 individuals on there, but the point has been made many times that individuals are both commercial and non-commercial people. And so I think they should be called out in here.
Is there objection to the general?
No.
Can we be clear on the wording?
Sure.
I think we're on. Yeah.
The
right. We understand that. Go ahead.
And how are you going to put the individuals in? How are you going to incorporate those words?
Just after the word non-commercial.
Individuals apostrophe.
Yeah, non-commercial / individuals, much like it's now for intellectual property / business.
No, the whole point is they are separate.
Okay.
Some individuals are commercial.
All right. Well, then probably intellectual property and business should be separately stated.
Fine.
That's fine too. Yeah.
Sort of based on a perception of alignment.
That's fine.
Okay.
Was there anything? Do you have a copy of the GA resolution around?
Not with me.
Okay. I mean, great.
Yeah, it's right. It's right.
Yeah, the... I mean, the others look less
some,
important, and I
some,
assume
some of the others
incorporated
are back,
anyway.
Some
yeah.
of them
okay.
are already in the LIPO paragraph 171, too.
Okay.
So just to be clear, in this paragraph 3, these things are, you know, in addition to the basic framework that WIPO did, which is the same approach the Senate took, is start with those paragraphs and add some things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I'd just like to request that I can, Mike, that I can somehow work with you or be involved with this, because I just want to make sure that this thing works smoothly. Okay.
Louis, can you read back the languages as edited?
Can I just read back the edited parts? As exactly as the handout, except under the third resolution, the second item now reads, the president or his delegate should convene a small drafting committee, including persons selected by him, to express the views and consider the interests of the registrar... A registrar, take out the, I guess, comma, non-commercial, comma, individual, comma, intellectual property, comma, and business interests, semicolon. Yes. And then down in 5, just before the word minimize, add define and.
Is there further discussion? Is there a motion to approve?
Move.
Second? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion is approved. I'd like to express my appreciation to Lewis in particular, and many other people who have worked very hard on a remarkably complex matter.
Okay, we're going to go to
right, the over.
The next item has to do with the extension of the terms of office of the initial at-large directors. If you'll excuse me for a moment, I need to... We're going to go over that. Yes, so this matter comes before us because although we have made considerable progress on electing... adding elected directors to the board, we nevertheless will not complete that process prior to September 30th, 1999, and therefore, in order for the board to be able to continue its work, it's necessary to extend the terms as was originally contemplated in the bylaws and in the discussions last summer. The specific language, let's see, yes, the specific language, the operative language here, and I think speaking for the board, that we are by no means anxious to extend our terms. On the other hand, ICANN has important work to do, and that work should not be disrupted by this particular matter. Therefore, the language that has been proposed and posted is that resolved under Article 5, Section 1 of the Corporation's bylaws, the term of each of the at-large directors of the initial board is extended to expire on the sooner of, one, the seating of the at-large director's successor, selected pursuant to the process referred to in Article 5, Section 4, sub 4 of the bylaws, and, second, September 30th, 2000. So, in the extreme, the initial directors are adding 12 months to their term. It is the expectation that will not occur, and that they will be duly replaced by elected at large in a shorter term. And we'll have some indication of that in the discussion later this morning on the at large membership.
So we're not allowed to vote our self-interest on this one.
Is there discussion on the motion? May I have a motion to approve? So move. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
No? Anyone no? The motion is approved. The next item on our agenda this morning is, in fact, discussion and resolution on at-large membership, which Director Crewe will lead.
Let me give a short preamble before moving to the proposal. ICANN is incorporated in the state of California in the United States as a not-for-profit corporation, and thus falls under Californian corporation law. That law provides for certain rights to be assigned to members, members being defined as people or entities who directly elect directors. A number of those rights potentially would allow individuals to take action which would be quite disruptive to the activities of ICANN. And furthermore, because of the way the supporting organization structure is arranged, they are rights that are not available to members of supporting organizations, and therefore we do not have parity. My personal view is that it is not appropriate to allow those rights to rest with the at-large members through the at-large members directly electing directors to the board. After all, it was never the intention that those rights would be conferred on any of the members of ICANN. It is essentially an accident of the Californian law that we have these rights. We have made considerable efforts to try to resolve this issue, to retain the rights of at-large directors to directly elect their at-large directors without them becoming having access to these particular rights, but the legal advice is that they would not stand up in law. So I have a number of resolutions, and I think if we discuss them in groups, the first two together perhaps, I would move that the at-large directors should be selected by an at-large council, the members of which are directly elected by the at-large members of ICANN, and further move that the at-large council shall consist of 9 members selected pursuant to an election process to be developed by the President and approved by the Board that is consistent with the following principles. The at-large membership shall be geographically diverse, broadly representative of the Internet user community, and shall consist of at least 5,000 individuals. Of the 9 members of the at-large council, 5 shall be elected directly by the residents of ICANN's 5 defined geographic regions, with each regional council member elected by the residents of his or her region. The other 4 council members shall be elected globally by all ICANN at-large members. A candidate for a regional at-large seat must be a citizen of a country located in that region. And election to the at-large council should be conducted in at least 2 stages, if consistent with the selection of at least some at-large directors prior to July 1st, 2000. Perhaps, Mr. Chairman, we could discuss those points before moving on and see if we have the test of views of the board. Discussion?
Thank you. You go first. I believe that this is a very good proposal to adjust the corporation to the particularities of California law. So I'm in complete agreement with the first resolution. I also accept fully The structure of the second resolution I would like to put forward to the board, a possibility to enlarge the number of members of the council, and maybe a good way to do it is, since it's not necessary to have a one-to-one relation between the number of directors and the size of the council, to just double the numbers, so that we decide to have a council of 18 members, of which 10 shall be elected from the regions, and the other 8 will be elected globally.
Hans, what's the rationale for that? Could you just give the explanation of why you think that's a good idea?
I believe that in the at-large council, it gives a better opportunity to have a global regional representation in the council.
Well, I mean, there's some issues here. One is simply cost. Yeah, like how many? It certainly doesn't cost twice as much to elect twice as many of these people, but there's, you know, I'm not sure exactly what the benefits are. On the other hand, I'm not sure how much I care one way or the other. You're creating something that's sort of about the same size as the Names Council, which may or may not be interesting. But I mean, I'd like to sort of go back and talk about what these people do. Their basic job is to select the directors, but they're also in charge of managing the outreach program and this kind of stuff. And frankly, if you have 21, I'm not sure you're going to get any work done. Or if you have 18, if you have 9, it's a bigger commitment, but there's some hope that people will actually do something. And I'm not actually sure what I think, but I want to discuss it and sort of figure out what the variation in numbers means. I mean, you can have a broader group. You may make the whole thing less susceptible to capture, which is, of course, important.
And you also have a, not very much, but a closer relation to the regions. If you have two people from a region, you reach further into the region. You can share more of the load of the work in a region. So I do believe that, on the contrary, it will make life easier for the council and the members of the council to share it between 80 people who stretch further into the world than with nine people.
For you or for Greg, is the assumption, I mean, are these people going to meet? Are they going to be more like outreach coordinators to their regions? It may not be determined yet, but what's the texture of what they're supposed to be doing?
The at-large council, I believe, would be much more than just a body that selects the at-large directors. It would act as, in a similar manner to the councils of the supporting organizations. It would have responsibility to ensure that at-large members had access to information about activities and communicated with them and allowed them to participate with them in discussion of issues being considered by the board, so that they can provide an input to the board's deliberations from the views of the at-large membership. They would also have the very important role of funding the at-large membership infrastructure and activities. As you know, we've already resolved the principle that the at-large membership basically have to find the funding for their activities as an at-large membership. I'm sure that as ICANN develops, the councils supporting ICANN will develop additional responsibilities and functions, and that would occur for the at-large council as well. I guess looking at the sizes of the supporting organisation councils, they vary from smaller to larger. I must admit, I don't have a very strong view. I selected 9 as being the number that we had been working on in the previous membership advisory committee, and saw no particular reason to go beyond that particular structure. but Hans has some point, has a point of view.
So when you say funding, you mean actually getting funding, not out of their own pockets? I mean,
just
to clarify.
Yes.
So I'd almost say make it 20 simply so that it doesn't have, I mean, 20 as opposed to 18 in the sense of there shouldn't be a one-to-one correspondence between directors and the council. But we, seriously, we still need to think, why does someone want to be on this council? I mean, if I were, you'd assume somebody would want to actually be a director rather than be on the council. What is, I mean, are these just well-meaning people who are volunteers, or how do we?
Could I comment on that? I think that the we've had some discussion over here that that in the effort to move this forward, some areas may have been omitted, including the fact there's some aspects of these resolutions which clearly require staff work in order to bring a detailed proposal back to the board, and we may wish to, as we go through here, distinguish between the guidance, the direct guidance the board is giving the staff, and the request by the board for the staff to develop a fuller thing, particularly in conjunction with the part of this that deals with an additional membership task force. With reference to the council composition, speaking for myself, I'm persuaded by Hans's argument that one person per region is a potential hardship, noting the difficulties that both the board and other of our organizations have had with even the difficulties of convening teleconference calls. I think that and particularly given the fact that the division of the entire planet into five regions gives an entirely false sense of homogeneity within those regions, that it would be to our advantage to do that. I also think that there's no particularly magic formula between the regionality of this and the global pool of it, and I'd be happy to support one that had a minimum of two per region but did not go all the way up to 18 or 20.
Perhaps to comment on Esther's question, why would someone be interested in joining the council? I believe that we see the need in the structure of the supporting organizations that there is a body that organizes and communicates with the membership of the supporting organization and presents issues that are of particular interest to the interest of the supporting organization members. And they can represent those views in a very partisan manner, as opposed to their nominees to the board who have to act in the interests of all of the stakeholders of ICANN, which is essentially the whole of the internet community. Looking at the at-large structure, if there were not a council, I think that the at-large directors would have some difficulty and perhaps even conflict of interest if they were trying to do that organization of the at-large members, marshal at-large membership views for presentation to boards in their own right. And indeed, earlier models did see that there would be a need for an at-large council anyway. And the role of a council, I think, is quite distinct from the role of a director from that point of view. And it would attract people who had that particular interest in mind.
Can Eugenio Triana from Spain, one of our directors, hear us? Eugenio, can you hear us?
No. Okay, we'll try again.
Okay. I'm not objecting, but I'm discussing. It's true. If I'm on the Names Council, obviously I've got some company paying my freight and giving me the time to do it probably and so forth. And this raises the question, which again staff is going to have to consider, but I think the board should talk about it. Do we want these people to be paid? Yeah, if you're coming here on behalf of a company, it's easy. But if you're supposed to be a volunteer from some not very rich country, how are your expenses going to be funded? And we need to be sort of explicit about that so that becoming a member of the names of the at-large council isn't a boondoggle, but it also shouldn't be a burden that deters anybody with good motives.
As I gave a reaction to Director Dyson, all the activities in ICANN are pro bono, and only in very many minor instances we indicate a fee. I do believe that participation in an at-large council is important and may be supported by the internet community, but not by ICANN. So I would like to consider maybe that those individuals who have difficulty in funding their participation, they look to other sources, not to ICANN, but to internet communities all around the world to collectively express their interest in the participation of the ICANN process and seeking a regional or a local national funding. I would object to any funding by ICANN of these activities.
What about at least their expenses?
Esther, it seems to me that it is a gigantic assumption to assume that everybody involved in the other supporting organizations is funded by some large corporation that has limitless funds. I just don't think that's accurate. So this is obviously an issue that probably needs to be considered by the board in general. I mean, we have still some questions by people involved in the other supporting organizations as to what, if any, role ICANN will have in funding. And when we say ICANN in this context, it's not this group of people sitting up here, it's the internet community through whatever funding mechanism ICANN establishes. So that's a legitimate issue, but it probably ought to be wrapped up into that bigger discussion.
Okay, but it's still, you're right by and large, but there still is a difference between a group representing individuals and something that is more focused on, you know, there's an organization for most of the people in the other, and you're right, not everybody gets funded, but I just think it's something to look at, and whether the internet community could fund their expenses, at least through ICANN. I just don't want this to turn into something where, again, it's just these big organizations. Yeah, you're not going to find some housewife most likely wanting to be on the names on the at-large council.
It seems to me that the challenge is to figure out how to assure that participation doesn't cost that much, and look at the mechanisms that we're trying to use. Physical presence, it seems to me, can't be so required. We have to, ICANN and the community has to design mechanisms that do not make such a distinction between haves and have-nots. That's the challenge.
Can I just make one other legalistic point? It seems to me that in addition to the language, Greg, that you read in your when you read the resolutions, we do need, and this is just a late night omission by the staff, we do need some additional language to the effect of further resolved that the president and staff are directed to prepare implementing bylaws, including a description of the specific rights of members and the responsibilities and scope of the at-large council to be presented to the board for its review and approval following public comment.
Yeah. Is there objection to that language?
Yes, that's definitely true. I made the note myself to raise it at the end that not only that, but we also need to direct the president to harmonize the bylaws in accordance with this resolution, as he will do with the other resolutions that are passed today.
Bringing us back to a rather large and complex set of resolutions here, perhaps we ought to
not settle the numbers at the moment, but go through and see if there are any other items in here on which we contemplate changes. I think that that would bring us down to item 3 in the second resolution. Is there a comment on that?
Just a clarification of what it means in terms of timing and what would be consistent or inconsistent.
The objective is basically, as we are going to be developing and establishing a worldwide online election process, that we would like to test it to ensure that it is working satisfactorily, perhaps by electing half of the at-large council, and then, if necessary, fine-tune the process before electing the other half. Now, that obviously takes time, and until the full council has been put in position, cannot appoint the at-large electors. So that the election of the at-large council in two stages would have to be consistent with the objective of having at-large directors, at least some at-large directors, appointed prior to the 1st of July 2000. But it's essentially a case of caution, taking a step at a time in what would be quite a new and potentially complex operation.
Esther, the other point here is that this is an attempt to follow the board's guidance that they would like to see the at-large, the elected at-large directors come on to and replace them in more than one tranche, so that there's some, so that there's not a complete wholesale turnover and the loss of that learning experience. And the question here, and the reason it's worded this way, is it's not clear yet to the staff or to anybody else who's talked about this, whether it can be done consistent with that objective. And so we're just going to have to think harder about that and come back to the board with a conclusion.
Is there some notion then that you could have half the council select half the directors or something?
Well, that's one of the issues I think that needs to be thought about. I mean, logically, I'm not sure that follows automatically, because if you elected half the council and then determined that there was some significant tuning up of the election process that you needed, you probably wouldn't want to have just those people selecting directors. And so doing it this way instead of doing it directly election complicates the process, and we just simply haven't had the time to think through and consult with enough people to figure out whether we can do it consistent with all these objectives. These objectives may be in tension, and the board may have to make some choices.
And then there's this whole issue of geographical diversity as well.
So I think that ties together with the numbers I was suggesting we go through and then come back to that. So is there further discussion on 3 that we will, our intent at this time, subject to future resolution, is to conduct the elections in two stages? Okay. Moving now to the next resolution, which essentially has been colloquially referred to as MAC 2. This is a membership implementation task force to advise the staff on a variety of items that are laid out here. Is there discussion on this?
We need, I think, to read this resolution. As you'll recall, I stopped reading at the after the second resolution. So just for the information of the audience, as well as for the board, it's further resolved that the president is authorized to convene a membership implementation task force, which shall generate and implement strategies for outreach and recruitment of a broad and numerous membership that is globally representative of the internet user community, identify potential sources of funding for the initial at-large council elections, design effective membership authentication and online election procedures, and monitor and oversee the initial at-large council elections to ensure that they are conducted openly and fairly.
Is there discussion on this? It seems to be quite consistent with the prior discussion deliberations of the board. Greg, why don't you go ahead with the next one?
Perhaps before I do, I could comment that a number of people have already indicated their willingness to serve on such a task force. So I don't believe we'll have any difficulty filling it with very able people. And finally, I move that the President and staff are directed to seek to obtain the necessary funding to conduct the election of the initial at-large council and authorised, subject to the availability of adequate funds, to hire or retain sufficient staff support to administer the at-large membership program, support the at-large council, develop and implement computer and software systems for membership records and online election processes, coordinate the outreach program and other necessary and related tasks.
Could I ask whether in that last one, part you are talking about funding for the initial setting up of all of this, or whether you're looking for an ongoing source of support?
We are seeking funding for what can be defined, I think, as a project to set up the system. I think that if it may be more palatable for potential donors to say, here is a self-contained project with a defined objective with which we can be associated and support that, rather than an ongoing and uncertain annual expense. And I would believe that we would want the at-large council to have a say in how they would handle the financing of the ongoing costs of the at-large membership.
Which I believe we've more or less agreed should be funded by the members themselves or the electorate itself in the long run. Can you just clarify, or maybe we're going to, it's another issue to think about, but there's the task force that helps get the council elected, and then the council selects the directors, and presumably if you're on the task force you can't run for election to the council, or how does that work? And likewise, what keeps the council from appointing themselves, I assume?
These are questions of detail, and I would seek the advice of the task force, I think, on these matters. But just to give a personal view, I would suggest that the members of the task force would not be ineligible to stand for either the council or for the board as at-large members, because they will have considerable expertise in the processes and philosophy behind at-large member, and it would be a pity to lose their services, potential services on those councils or on the as directors. I would suggest that if an individual has been elected to the council and wishes to stand for election as a director, they should stand down from the council immediately on nominating, and if they are elected to the board, they should resign from the council.
If I could just make a general point here, as I understand it, the intention of the board in adopting the supporting organization bylaws, both for the DNSO and now for the PSO and heading toward the ASO, was that they assumed that that a member of a supporting organization council could not simultaneously serve as a director of ICANN, for the simple reason that as a director of ICANN, you have fiduciary responsibilities for the entire organization that may be inconsistent with service on the council of a supporting organization. The bylaws, I'm sorry to say, are not crystal clear on that, and so the staff will probably be proposing a clarifying amendment to ensure that this principle is consistent across the board of the supporting organizations, and it seems to me should also be applied in the at-large side of the of ICANN.
I'd like to come back to the funding issue. As I read the resolution, it's not explicit that the at-large membership will have the responsibility to figure out how to fund its elections and so forth in the long run. And it seems to me that how the initial round gets set up could easily be more complicated or more expensive than what will be realistic in the long run. And I think it might be wise to address that with a further resolve.
Do you have some language in mind?
Why don't you repeat it for Greg? Cause, sorry, Greg.
He was telling me the answer.
Oh, good. Well, why don't we just... Perhaps we should just turn to Andrew.
If I understood you right, the question is, should we make explicit the fact that the membership is expected to fund itself over the long term?
And its elections.
And its elections. The board's Berlin resolution already adopts that principle. There's no reason that we couldn't restate it in here to make it clear in the charge to the task force or something like that.
Yeah.
If that would make you more comfortable, but it's
just reference that bylaw, and I think that would.
Or that resolution. Okay. Why don't I'll dig that up and we'll put a reference to it in.
As long as we're on this subject, I think, and I don't take any pleasure in saying this, that we need to be clear that much as we'd like to proceed immediately to the implementation steps laid out here, that our current funding situation doesn't permit that. So we certainly, I think we've had in prior decisions agreement to seek funding, pardon me, to move forward as rapidly as we can, but we don't have that funding in hand. And so the phrase in here about subject to the availability of adequate funds, in fact, is an operative phrase.
Well, I don't want to count on Andrew Shapiro, and I don't know if he's out there, but I volunteer to go after Markle or whoever to make this happen. And I really think this is, and Linda should know this too, I mean, this is a pretty easy thing to fund. It's not a bunch of geeks working on protocols.
It's easy to fund for the initial rather than
for the
design.
Right.
It is not easy to fund in terms of the ongoing operation.
And that's why the membership, and I mean no disrespect to geeks, but the point is this whole democracy, you know, it plays very well. It's easy to fund. It's something Markle and a number of others foundations. So, I really don't think that should be what holds us up. Our own staff is incredibly busy, and that's going to be and getting people up to speed. But I don't think the funding should be as much of a problem.
Yeah, but the two things go together. Initial funding and in the long run should be secured in one stroke.
No, you can't, because the long run funding is going to come from the electorate. I mean, it's going to come from a policy that they pay to be members.
But there should be assurance that can be reached before you start the process.
Well, we've pretty much already agreed that it will. I mean, nothing is done yet, and we need to get the 5,000 members, because if we have 10 members, they're not going to fund anything. But
I think, if I have it correctly, that we've now covered the salient items of the whole page plus the addition, with the exception of the size of the council and the division between regional and at large. And I believe it's correct that we do not have to settle that today. It's the board's pleasure as to whether they want to adopt that now or whether they want to defer it.
Well, I think we should give the task force and the staff a strong indication, and I'd like to make a suggestion. I think that in determining a number, we are uncertain about the level of interest that there will be in the community to be a member, and if you're a member, to then be a council member. So putting a high number may embarrass us by not, in fact, getting enough applications to fill the positions. So I would suggest the following wording, which may need a little bit of fine-tuning, but that the second resolution read that the at-large council shall consist of a minimum of 9 and a maximum of 18 members, etc., and that moving down to the composition for regional diversity, it read, of the members of the at-large council, at least one and not more than 2 per region shall be elected directly by the residents of ICANN's 5 defined geographic regions, etc. The remaining council members shall be elected globally. Now, that's the intention is that if there are enough candidates, we can say we'll have 2 per region, and the rest are global. If there is a sparsity of candidates, we say, well, there will be one per region, and the rest are global.
Only when you, the rest is global, is then undefined, when not enough representatives from regions are in the council. I would once again try to convince you that choosing a council of, or designing a council of 18 members with two per region and eight global would be a wise decision. And I believe in the membership, if you read the comments and listen to the discussions, see the interest also from the regions. Showing the hands yesterday in a public meeting was a clear indication that we can count on at least two people from the regions to participate in the council. So I move a plea to you to decide on 18, which of 10 and 8.
I agree with Hans. I think it makes sense. I wasn't convinced in the beginning, but I am now. And second, that, you know, if we set it as a task for the membership task force to do, we all expect them to do it. It's a question of outreach and of persuading people that they should want to do this. And, you know, it's a pretty shabby outreach membership if we can't find enough people to constitute a council of 18, and that's part of our task.
Well, if there's just a little clarification in terms of why 8 versus 3 or 5, just again in the interest of, you know, keeping a manageable body.
It's scaling the principle we have been considering before of the 5 regions, 1 each, and 4 global. Scaling up with a factor of 2, but if you want to modify it to a different distribution, one other possibility would be 5 times 2 regional and 5 global, so you have a unit of 15. If you're more comfortable with that, I believe that a council of 15, 2 per region as defined by ICANN and 5 global would be a perfect compromise between those concerns.
Let me just...
Yeah, I'd be very happy with that. Just to, again, in terms of large groups of people, 3 may not be critical, but I think it's better off with a smaller body.
Just so the board is clear, I mean, you're making a trade-off here that you should make knowingly and intelligently. The pursuit of geographic diversity so far by this board has been an attempt to ensure that all geographies are represented, not to equalize representation between geographies. The notion of electing people globally means that the entire electorate has a say in who is elected. If you elect people regionally, the entire electorate does not have a say. And so the only difference between 18 and 15 is that you're reducing the number of people that the entire electorate has a say in electing. That's a choice that you can make. It's a policy choice, and you ought to be clear that that's the choice you are making.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty comfortable with that choice at a council level.
Just a comment to remind the board that there was a straw poll conducted yesterday, and admittedly it was a very small sample, but there seemed to be an overwhelming majority of a single constituency. This is actually reinforcing Joe's point that reducing the proportion of globally elected directors may not necessarily be a wise move.
It seems to me that we shouldn't give an inadvertent signal that the board has a conviction on this matter, that we don't really have, that we're making an efficiency and cost trade-off rather than a principle trade-off. I guess I'm persuaded on the basis of that since the 18 is consistent in terms of its balance with prior discussions on the matter, that we not give, as I say, an inadvertent signal that somehow or other we have a different theoretical notion about correctness.
I would support the proposal that read that the at-large council shall consist of a maximum of 18 and then goes on two per region, etc. In other words, that leaves the door for the council to operate if it doesn't achieve 18 members.
It's just, it's kind of hard to run an election and say, well, you're going to elect between 5 and 9 people.
You'll know from the candidates.
You'll know from the candidates, well.
If you get more than 18 candidates, fine.
I'd like to propose that, since, among other things, that the manner in which we go forward does not require a final decision on this item, that we accept Greg's language in principle, subject to deliberation at the next meeting, at the next public meeting.
Yeah, from the drafting perspective, actually, it makes sense. What I have here is was Greg's language, that the at-large council shall consist of a maximum of 18 members. The final implementation policy document has to be approved in November, so that'll give the board between now and then to revisit this question, and maybe we can put out a request for public comment in the meantime, and we could do that tomorrow. And we can just write the resolution consistent with the idea that we're going with 18 unless the board decides it wants to change its mind in November.
Fine, but I'm assuming we can start the membership task force now without waiting for November. Okay.
Oh, yes.
So it's only the elections.
When the election, that's when.
Great. And so, in fact, it's not just the staff, but probably the task force itself that's going to be contributing to the thinking on this issue. Okay.
I believe we're almost have closure on this. Is there further discussion? May I have a motion?
Let me just reiterate the changes that have been made to the text that's in front of you. The first alteration is in the second resolved. I've changed it to read as follows. Further resolved that the at-large council shall consist of a maximum of 18 members selected pursuant to an election process to be developed by the president and approved by the board that is consistent with the following principles. First principle is as read by Greg. Second principle now reads, of the members of the at-large council, at least one and not more than two per region shall be elected directly by the residents of ICANN's 5 defined geographic regions, with each regional council member elected by residents of his or her region. The remaining council members shall be elected globally by all ICANN at-large members. A candidate for the regional at-large seat must be a citizen of a country located in that region.
One other detail here: if you're going to leave open the possibility of two from a region, which I take it is where we're heading, would you want to require that those two have to be from different countries in the same region? In other words, to prohibit them from being, if there are two, to prohibit both from coming from the same country.
Okay. Well, why don't we add a sentence?
And believe me, the Canadians feel left out. I mean, we don't want more Australians.
How about if we had a sentence that says that let me turn off the mic for a second, talk to Louie, and I'll be back with it.
Maybe. Yes. That gives me the opportunity to address maybe to the other council the issue of the remaining council members, and not more than 8 will be elected globally.
Yeah, I think that's consistent.
That's
right. Right, absolutely. Right.
Okay.
Shall I,
I have one point, Andrew, on the other council members. I think we should specify there that they will not be more than eight. So to make the arithmetic perfectly clear.
Okay, so why don't we say, well, let me just add a phrase that does that, then I'll read you the whole thing and you can tell me if you're satisfied. Lawyerly.
It's okay.
Don't tell me the rest of the staff. So. let me take a crack at reading this, and then we'll see how we did. This is Principle 2 in the second resolution in front of you. The members of the at-large council, at least one and not more than two per region, shall be elected directly by the residents of ICANN's 5 defined geographic regions, with each regional council member elected by the residents of his or her region. The remaining council members, and then there's a parenthetical that says no more than eight, shall be elected globally by all ICANN at-large members. The candidate for a regional at-large seat must be a citizen of a country located in that region. No two members of the at-large council elected from the same region shall be citizens of the same country.
So we've had this
stopped midway through. So that's the revised number 2. And I've added a resolution at the end which says, further resolve that the president and staff are directed to prepare implementing bylaws, including a definition of the specific rights of members and the responsibilities and scope of the at-large council, to be presented to the board for its review and approval following public notice and comment. And I think to the extent that there are any gaps in this at this point, the minutes of this discussion will give the staff adequate guidance as to where we're supposed to go with this.
With that reading of the revised language, you may have a motion.
I move.
And second? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion is approved. We'll now move to the item on acceptance of the independent review final report. And Director Wilson will lead this.
Members of the board, you've seen the report, you've heard the discussion at the Berlin meeting and at this meeting, and now that we've gotten the at-large membership underway, I think that I offer this report from the Independent Review Committee and recommend to you that we accept this report and ask the staff, the president and staff, to prepare a written policy implementing these principles prior to the ICANN meeting in November. And we have a draft resolution to accomplish that. But first, I'd like to ask if there's any discussion that you wish to have on any of the points that came up in our discussion or in the document itself.
Well, I'd just like to make the point of clarification with regard to staff responsibilities for timely action on these matters, that the when this is placed in the bylaws, it will require that a complaint be filed through the reconsideration process, which has some time deadlines on it, and then further has, if the person filing the complaint is not satisfied with the board's action on reconsideration, it can be refiled with the independent review panel and is again subject to time deadlines. These for global
international organization, these are ambitious targets, but I'm speaking on behalf of the staff, we would endeavor to meet them.
I think we probably should make it explicit amongst ourselves that these are the deadlines that we would expect to operate when ICANN is up, fully funded, operating. This is the steady state ambition, a commitment to function rapidly because we know the importance of having a good resolution. We aren't going to be able to get there immediately. It's just not impossible to do it, but this is what we're aiming for. And I think I'm not sure whether we need any kind of language to acknowledge that we're in a ramp up.
Linda, I think it's inevitably going to take a certain amount of time to put this process into place, and the board will have an opportunity to review the actual policy itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that to the extent at that time, at the time that the board is presented with the actual policy, the staff thinks that they need some interim relief from any of these deadlines, they can make that request to the board at that time.
Right. We might also even ask them to think about, although I don't think this needs to be in a resolution, to think about when being fully ramped up seems possible, so that we hold our feet to the fire, but don't ask the impossible of the staff who are already doing the impossible.
The timing of all this also feeds into the issue of who exactly selects the panel, as we discussed yesterday, in terms of the SO, the directors and the at-large and so forth.
Yes, in the review, in the report, we have acknowledge that when we get the at-large membership in operation, then we believe that this will need to be revised so that they can play a role just as well as the other councils can. And I think that's something that as these two activities go along in parallel, the staff is going to know whether it's time to make the revisions to get that done. The resolution then would be, whereas the board has received and reviewed the final report of the Advisory Committee on Independent Review, whereas the board recognizes and appreciates the considerable effort put forth by this committee, and I would parenthetically say the staff, whereas the board has considered the comments submitted via the Internet and at the Berlin and Santiago meetings, it is hereby resolved that the board accepts the principles for independent review submitted by the committee and directs the president and staff to prepare a written policy implementing those principles prior to ICANN's annual meeting in November.
May I have a motion to approve? Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Resolution is approved. That completes the action resolutions for this morning. We do have an item of considerable interest to the community having to do with the Y2K report from the Root Server Advisory Committee, and Director Mariah will make a few comments about that.
There have been a tremendous amount of kind of requirement and the interest about the year 2000 issue status of root name server, and so root server system advisory committee RSSC has been working on that, and with other conclusion from all the discussion for about a year, starting from the July 1998, the three of the author from the member of the RSSC with the cooperation with others finalized the documentation called the Root Name Server Year 2000 Status in July 13th of this year. This was submitted and reviewed inside the RSSC, and I'd like to report to the board that the documentation is ready and on the website of the ICANN. And I also, so the report is basically reporting about what the root server operators have been doing in terms of the testing, and also all the investigation regarding to the year 2000 problems about the root name server system, as well as the components for the root name server system itself. And other issues like environment for the root name server system, as well as the communication structure among the operators of the root name server system. And the report concludes that basically no operational impact on the root name server system has been noted, but there's no such a thing as a perfect on this issue. So the group's going to be working, still working on this issue. But I'd like to report just that this is done and on our web. And I also finally I'd like to thank the three authors, co-authors of the documentation: David Conrad, Akira Kato, and Bill Manning. Also, the other people who reviewed and the supporting to generate this documentation in the RSSC committee members, as well as the external people, especially the Y2K experts on the community. So that's about it.
I just like to comment that although ICANN has no official role in Y2K compliance, this is a matter of obviously of concern for anyone who has any responsibility for computer systems anywhere in the internet, and I'm very pleased that very much on their own initiative, a group of people that Jun has named have undertaken some extra effort to ensure the community that this matter is being attended to. We have now other comments. We need to discuss briefly a question of future schedule. Let me just mention that we have about 9 weeks until our next meeting in Los Angeles at the Sheraton Hotel at Los Angeles Airport. We have a great deal of work to accomplish over that 9 weeks, and we'll certainly do our best to take a good run at it. We may also need interim meetings, and Joe Sims wishes to talk to us about that in a minute. And after Joe is finished or any board comments on that, I'd like Andrew to give us a briefing on where we stand about planning for meetings in the year 2000.
Because the testbed accreditation phase is now scheduled to end on September 10th, and in the light of the ongoing discussions between ICANN, the DOC, and NSI, it is conceivable but not certain that that there will be matters that need to be brought before the board prior to September the 10th. I just want to alert the board to that. Make sure that the board members leave with the staff all necessary contact information during now and then, if you're not going to be in your normal place, and tell you that obviously we will let you know of that possibility as soon as we know that there's a need for it. I think it is highly likely that one way or another during the month of September, we will need to have a discussion, whether it's an action meeting or simply a briefing, on the status of these ongoing discussions. And so whether that's early in September or later in September is not at all clear at the moment. I just wanted to alert the board that that is likely to happen.
Yeah, I don't know if it makes much sense at this point to try and schedule something, but sort of separately from that, I think it's pretty clear. I, to be blunt, I was just looking at my schedule, and I'd like to propose doing a phone call on the morning of September 20th, just because there's a whole lot of, it's a Monday morning. If that's bad, let's try something else. But, I mean, I think it's pretty clear we're going to need something. It is hard to organize these at the last minute. So I'd like to try and pick a date now.
Just a point of personal privilege, at the moment, my daughter is scheduled to have a baby on September the 20th, so it's conceivable. It's conceivable that I might be otherwise occupied.
If you can schedule it more precisely. I mean, but I think it would be useful to pick one now so that we can, you know, we can... What? You don't have a schedule?
We're getting pushback on this.
Well,
let the staff go out immediately to try to find some acceptable dates.
Yeah. I mean, it's just we won't be able to get quorums easily if we don't do it in advance.
The board in Berlin set a tentative schedule for meetings for next year. The tentative idea was to go from a 4-meeting-a-year schedule to a 3-meeting-a-year schedule. That still seems feasible, although as we start to look at the nature of the transition next year, that may become trickier. However, I anticipate that if there were any additional meetings, it would be not involve this group of directors. So you can sort of relieve yourselves, feel relieved in that way. The tentative schedule right now is to hold a meeting ideally in Africa in the first week of March, the first full week of March, which is somewhere in the neighborhood of March 7th. Actually, I've got a calendar that I can... 7th to 9th. There are a couple... We expect to get at least 3 proposals from local organizers. There may be others. And we'll have to review those proposals against our meeting requirements and see if they're workable. The staff plans to post maybe as early as this afternoon or tomorrow, depending on how much follow-up work I've got to do on other things, a request for proposals that will outline ICANN's meeting requirements in general and note the dates and ask for proposals. I think it's fair to say that this Santiago Organizing Committee has set a very high standard. They've done an incredible job from, you can tell from me that I'm vastly less anxious than I was at our last 2 meetings, and that's a sign of how well organized this was by the local committee. So anyway, we're going to post the request for proposals and hope that we can get a good one and get it up and running quickly. The anticipated next meeting is going to be in Yokohama in July. June, what are the specific dates that we settled on?
There is a tentatively booking a space on a Monday and Tuesday, which is July 17th and 18th, which is, of course, overlapping with the INA. So that is a Monday, Tuesday. We'd rather define soon, although the space is available. So the issue here is that probably we are usually doing the 3-day meeting, right?
Well, and in fact, I think that in Los Angeles, it's going to be a 4-day meeting with some of the DNSO constituency groups choosing to have their own meetings 2 days in advance of the public meeting. But that doesn't directly impact the board or require the board to be around. That just means the meeting spaces somewhere would have to be available for people to meet on Saturday and Sunday.
Okay. So your intention is doing the work during the weekend, right?
Exactly.
Okay, if that is the case, then there should be no problem.
Exactly. So we'll say that Monday, Tuesday will be the ICANN board open meeting on Monday, board meeting on Tuesday.
Okay.
And if the related groups, as long as it's possible to find hotel rooms or university rooms or whatever, some sort of meeting rooms that would be available for the DNSO, the other SOs on Saturday and Sunday, then I think we're okay.
So you're saying that this is kind of defined, right? We can go ahead.
Okay. I mean, if the board's, I mean, I shouldn't speak for the board here, but
I already noted to the people who's arranging that for the space on the difference for a Monday and Tuesday.
Okay. And so to the board, the reason that we're going ahead with July so decisively is that we have the opportunity to do it in conjunction with an INET meeting, which obviously already brings together a huge number of the people that we want to attend an ICANN meeting. And June is very carefully worked out the conflicts so that we'll be okay having the board meeting on Tuesday, right?
Yeah, right. But the
not ideal.
So the space is all right, right? And so we don't have to do anything with their, say, kind of official relationship with the Internet Society, right?
That's exactly right. In fact, it's probably better based on past experience.
Because I'm wearing the other hat. So this is a coincidentally
hopping
on the same place.
Right? Exactly. Okay. Coincident, not in conjunction with, but coincidentally.
Okay, that's the understanding as well.
So March in Africa, July in Yokohama, and then the annual meeting will be back in the United States. We have not yet set a date for that because I think we've got to figure out when and how the transition from this board to the next board will be taking place. Probably it makes sense to have that meeting in advance of September 30th, which is the final cutoff point for this board to get out of the way. But that is really soon on the heels of July, and so maybe they're going to emerge to be no need, especially if we're going to be doing phase transitions where groups of directors are leaving the board and being replaced. Maybe that'll be okay. So it could well be, as Esther says, that the last meeting for this board would be in July. We think that the pace of these meetings is going to have to be slowed down, and the gap between November and March. It's probably a good idea to let everybody recuperate and recover. So, that's the update, Mike.
Yeah, this thing keeps on flipping off the agenda, and it's not a formal thing, but it may be something to consider in a phone call, and that is relieving Mike of his burden. I sent around the spec from the recruiter. We don't have any money to pay the recruiter, and we want to make sure that some of the other directors, the new directors, get a chance to weigh in on this. But at the same time, it takes a long time to do a search. And so, again, I'd really like to encourage the board to go ahead and do whatever needs to be done. And maybe, Joe, you can tell us just in terms of incurring the expense or the moving the process forward. But Yeah, unless he wants to be hanging out there in September desperately looking for a replacement. And let's face it, he's harder to replace than a board member. I really think we should get moving on this.
Well, the significant impediment to getting moving in a formal way is not having any money to pay anybody. But I think it probably, our assumption, probably heroic, is that we're going to resolve our regularized funding problem by November or at the November meeting. Maybe heroic, but that's the assumption. Assuming that happens, we ought to be prepared to immediately move forward on this basis. Now, if somebody can find a volunteer that wants to do it and not get paid until after November, then we can obviously move ahead faster than that.
I mean, this guy, Christopher Millen Partners, is certainly willing to do it on credit or promise. And, yeah, partly it depends on when Mike... do you have any comments on this? Okay. Well, then, can I ask that it be put on the agenda of the next meeting of the board?
That's what I was going to propose, yes.
for what it's worth, I just got an email from Eugenio saying that he was able to get through, but only to listen. So he listened, and he notes his concurrence with Greg's proposal and the way the membership thing came out. He'll get to sign off in the minutes, I guess, when all is said and done. But if Eugenio is still listening to us, hi. Wish you could be here. That's implicit in his email.
Well, if there is no further new business to consider and everybody's happy, I want to declare this meeting closed. I think I hope we all think it was a successful one. We certainly got a lot done, and I think it was a useful effort, and I hope the audience liked it, even though we shouldn't be paying attention to them. So.
Might I suggest, Esther, that that the arrangements that were made here by the organizers were really quite spectacular, and I think a round of applause from the audience would be a...
And one administrative note, I've compiled a document that has all the resolutions, so those of you that are in the audience will print some off, and I don't know how we can get it photocopied around here, but if there's a way to get it copied, we can run them off, and everybody can take them home with you for the plane ride.
And it'll be on the web, of course.
Thank you. You were the I'm close to 20 years, so
don't jump for old, right?
That's right.
Are you home again?
What are
you doing here? That's not a good idea.
Thank you.
That one.
Did you get the did you get a hold of the phone people?
I did get a hold of the phone people. I asked them to call me back. They haven't done it yet.
Have they responded to your fax from yesterday?
So I'm going to call them up again shortly and get mad at them.
So you know there's a fax right here. Let me see if it's for you. No. Dina. I think that is.
I think that's Dina Tobe.
Yeah, it's kind of odd, Mrs. Dina. Oh, wow.
Oops.
Are we...
Wow, we're broadcasting.
What is John doing?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm a part of it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.